We have mentioned several times today that some of our good friends amongst us who have been amongst us are leaving soon. Not all of them are here, some are. And I, for one, am very conscious of this separation that's looming when you do leave and we stay here. And conscious of such separation, there is one word that particularly comes to mind, and we find it first in this particular chapter, Genesis 31 and verse 49, a word, a name that was given to a place, indeed a heap of stones. It was given not by God's chosen servant Jacob, but by his father-in-law Laban, and the name is Mizpah. But of course we don't just settle with the name, we need to penetrate a little further, and there is an explanation given to us. Let me just read that verse. It was given the name Mizpah because, he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. And there was the word Mizpah to watch, watching. And it does appear first, as I say, in this portion, the setting of two men parting ways from each other. They'd spent around 20 years, Jacob mentions that a couple of times, in very close interaction with each other, with all its problems. And here they were parting, probably never to meet again. And it's in that setting that Laban uses this name to mark the place of their farewell. Does it say anything to and for us today in such a setting of parting? Now, with some reservations on the human background to it, it does say something, I believe, and I'll endeavour to show you how. And the two things that I would highlight here is first that we will be parted. There is something inevitable about it. But equally, there is the inevitability that God will be watching. And these are the two aspects that I would draw out of this in connection with this word, this passage, this story. So first of all, quickly, we will be parted. We will be parted. It will happen. As I say, there is some kind of inevitability that men will be separated from one another. You know, there are times that there are people that you go on, they're there right through life. There are others, and we think, especially in our day, that people are coming and going all the time, and it seems all that much easier that there will be partings. It does seem easier, doesn't it? Although, if you go back through many eras of history, people were moving all the time. It happened here, it's happened through so many of the ages of history. There was the constant shifting of people. And certainly in our day, it's not nearly as difficult or dramatic as it might have been for some who, not so long ago, spent perhaps 6 months traveling to India and had no intention, couldn't even contemplate returning, and would never meet again. And then, of course, for all of us, in the end, death does separate men from one another, at least from the viewpoint of this physical life that we live. And in one sense, from that sense, that point of view, perhaps Laban and Jacob can be looked on as fairly typical. Many people will go through some kind of separation from another at some point in life. Well, Laban and Jacob, as we read the chapter, and that's why we read the whole chapter, is to realize they had a few things to say to each other, didn't they? Not always pleasant. But it is interesting that, as Jacob highlighted, it was 20 years that they had spent together. As the chapter closes, Laban departed and returned to his place, and that's the last you ever hear of Laban through Scripture. He's been intimately involved with God's people from appearing. He appears first as Rebekah's brother, although he was, even then, it was because he was part of Abraham's wider family. Back in Genesis 24, he appears. Rebekah was Jacob's mother, remember? And then he appears in from chapter 29 until now as Rachel's father. And so he has played some prominent role thus far, and then he disappears. That's the kind of separation. And it's not the happiest of partings, is it? Remember the first part of the chapter, how Jacob reasoned with his wives and explained the situation, and they planned and plotted, and they found an opportunity, and they left. Without the normal farewells, Laban highlights that when he eventually catches up with them. And Jacob's explanation is, well, if I had done it that way, in the normal way, I would never have done it. It just couldn't have happened. He would never get away. And so Jacob had slipped away with his wives and his possessions, his livestock, when Laban had been away for a few days. When Laban eventually hears about it, he sets out, and after a week he catches up with him. And as he goes on and he speaks to Jacob, he does speak chiefly of the daughters, but here and there are hints that he insists in his own mind. He sees no reason that Jacob had any right to take any of these things with him. And then to top it all off, he's missing my gods in verse 30. Jacob, as you know, explains or gives him opportunity. He says, well, if you can find them, take them, and we'll deal with the person who's taken them. Jacob had no interest in these things. He hadn't planned to take them. But when they couldn't be found, Jacob returns with anger. He's been stirred up. And he says, it's effectively, if Laban is going to speak to me like that, I'm not going to help hold myself back either. That's just to round up what's happened here at this point of parting. There's a conflict. They are really not happy with one another. And it's because of that that we might be inclined to say, well, why are we going here? Looking at how they parted. When we are talking about parting with friends and on good terms. Is this the best place to go? Well, it's what Laban says that does bring real value to it. That's why it's here. Yes, it seems a long story, and we're trying to penetrate into the middle of it to find what it's all about. But I think it's what Laban says that gives us real value here. Laban is in that, from verse 43 to the end of the chapter, he's working out and he's making covenant with Jacob. He puts arrangements in place to account for the reality of this separation. He's not just ignoring its reality. He doesn't just walk away. He wants to make certain arrangements. And it may be a fair question for all of us. When separation does come, of any kind, have we taken due account of it? Have we really considered what it implies? I think of it a number of times. I've been visiting my family in Australia a number of times. And I get on that plane from that airport and I take off, and you can wave through the window and you see them disappearing, getting smaller. And you think over it again and again. And you think, now what lies ahead while we're apart? And how often that does happen. You and I will walk out of this room at the end of this service, and we'll be apart for a time. We won't be able to see one another. You turn around the corner and you're gone from sight. You're out of my reach. What can I do? Whether to help or anything else. Any measure of separation, have we taken due account of it? Because it is inevitable. It's not many miles from the point of our farewells to one another today, to that horizon. It's not far to that departure gate, Monday, Wednesday. And then you can't see one another. You go through security, and they're gone. Laban seems to have had some sense of that. Okay, from a bad spirit perhaps, but he does seem to have had some sense of it. And he was trying to put things in place to ensure that those that he was parting from, his daughters in particular, but those he was parting from, would be well cared for. It's not just that there is the fact of parting, but to be aware of its impact. Now, Laban at least professed to be concerned for the welfare of his daughters. There are many indications, I think, that he was just very self-centered, and it was painful for him to see that this was really going to happen. His daughters had no interest in him. They didn't believe that he was looking after them at all. If you read their response to Jacob's questions in 14 and so on, they saw no place for them back in Laban's home. But he's saying to Jacob, if I'm not there to protect them, I want to make sure that you don't abuse them in some way. But he couldn't do anything more about it himself once he had to go back. He was powerless. So he calls on Jacob's honor and he enters a covenant with him. There are those typical covenant actions of setting up a mark and then eating together on that place. It was a clear sign of entering into covenant together and to be bound by it. And it was then that Laban also called on God to look on them, to ensure that covenant was kept. There are all these things, and he goes back to this heap that's a witness, and there's that, and as Jacob or whoever it is passes by, it was to remind them of all that had gone by in this story. And then in the middle of all of it, he says this one thing. That's why I come to that tiny little place. May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. God is witness between you and me. But it's not just what men establish as a witness between them. But it must come back to this. What does God see as he looks upon us? Where Laban himself was helpless to do anything about it, I don't know that he fully understood what he was saying. I'm pretty sure he didn't. But it was like almost a desperate last call. He knew that Jacob had this God who had an impact in Jacob's life. Well, maybe this God could help. And so let's call on him. And very simply, we will be parted. As I said, even tonight we will be parted from one another. As long as we know that we will have our partings, how have we set our minds for it? And this then brings me to what I think is the main drive of this. This is where it fits into the whole story of Jacob and the story of the people of Israel, the story of the scriptures. And this is that God, as I put it, will be watching. You might think of Laban as, you might describe him as a semi-believer. It's as good as a non-believer. He may believe something about God, but he doesn't go all the way. It still leaves him stranded. But it's one of these strange places where this semi-believer, if you like, or non-believer, says more than he probably knew himself. I think he meant this in a threatening way to Jacob. God's watching you. You better be careful what you do with my daughters. There was that tone to it. But it was true. Whatever he meant behind it, it was true. God, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. That was most certain. Whatever else. And I say that because it's a fact that appears, you might have missed it, it appears in several ways in this chapter. Remember in verse 3, it was God who spoke to Jacob to say, now's the time to leave, I will be with you. What is Mizpah? May the Lord watch between you and me. And how is that? That means at least in part, not just watching Laban, but watching Jacob. God had said, I will be with you. He'd already promised that. Laban was some stages behind, as it happens. And then in the following verses as well, as Jacob went and spoke, he talked about to Rachel and Leah. He talked about how he had seen the change in Laban towards him. And he says in verse 5, but the God of my father has been with me. And so it goes on. He's repeated this a number of times. And then you find that place where Laban was chasing Jacob. And as Laban says, it was the night before they met that God had appeared to him. It was a somewhat chilling message, perhaps, in verse 24. And Laban took good notice of it. He really did restrain himself, I think, although there was that false self-confidence in verse 29. It is in my power to do you harm, but I won't, because the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, be careful what you're doing. Do you remember Pilate said something like this to Jesus? Something of the same note? Don't you realize I've got power over you to put you to death even? Jesus said, no. Not unless it's given to you. Very similar tone. But that's what God was doing. He was with Jacob already. He was working on Jacob's behalf. And he had a word to say to Laban, a word of warning. And Jacob makes the connection of these things. Jacob makes the connection with the growth of his own household and his own possessions. In verse 42, unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, a remarkable name for God in itself, had been with me, unless he'd been with me, surely now you, Laban, would have sent me away empty-handed. He's telling Laban directly, God has been with me through these 20 years. And Jacob agrees with Laban when Laban says, Mizpah, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. That's just to sketch it out, but it's there, running right through the chapter. Do you hear a story of Laban and Jacob? Do you hear a story of a 7-day chase of people who've snuck out at night with large flocks and trying to get away? Laban's trying to bring them back, and all this adventure and excitement and wonderful story. Through it all, do you see this point? That God is saying to Jacob, I'm watching you. I am watching you. I am with you. I'm taking you through all this. Laban will not be able to hold you back. And while Laban did leave at the end of the chapter, never to reappear, it's God who remains that uniting thread. It's a pathetic way of describing him, but in connection with what we're saying, that is what it's about. God is through all this. It is not, I said at the beginning, the major characters, did you notice? Laban and Jacob. But that's not really what it's about. The major character here is God working. He's chosen Jacob, and he's going to sort through things. He's going to bring Jacob where he wants to be. That was his promise. And Jacob remembers that. In fact, God had spoken to him, and Jacob tells this to his wives. In verse 13, God had said to him in this dream, I am the God of Bethel. 20 years before, God had appeared to Jacob and made this promise, I will bring you back, I will be with you all these days. And God is calling that to mind, that Jacob would return to the land of his own people. God is that uniting thread through the story. He always has been. He always will be. He has will be right through. And the whole story of the Old Testament is the story of Israel. Another name for Jacob, as appears in the following chapter, chapter 32. So what I'm saying is that Laban was a man with a very poor perception of God. But he was granted, he was used by God to state a great truth. He was one who was himself under the Lord's hand for God's purposes, for the sake of God's man and God's people. If Laban had any thought that he was the one who was drawing God's attention to Jacob, Lord, look at God, look at Jacob, and keep an eye on him and make sure he behaves properly. Well, it's quite sad, really, isn't it? Because what he had to say about God was what God was busy with anyway, and just hasn't realized it. He thought he was in charge. I'm not convinced altogether from this story alone that Jacob was fully aware either, but he acted on God's straightforward instructions to him in this particular case. What Laban has to say to him in that verse, we know that it's true because of what you see God doing, God saying, God working in the chapter on either side of that whole incident in Jacob's life. It's in this rather dramatic passage in Jacob's life that we're made aware, we should be if we're attentive, though it's in a rather peculiar way, we're made aware of what God has to say to men and to his special people in particular. That God is present. God is watching. That's the key word about Mizpah. May the Lord watch. The Lord does watch. On a number of occasions, the expression is used. Peter uses it, but it's also there in the Psalms. The eye of the Lord is on those who fear him. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, Peter says, to grant the security that we need so much. Or in the words that the Lord speaks to the nation of Israel before they entered the promised land. The Lord, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. And Hebrews goes to recall that as well in chapter 13. It's the presence of the Lord with his people. Mizpah means watch. And if you read through the Old Testament, you find Mizpah, the place where this happened, you find it does appear from time to time. As Israel went back and forth for one reason or another, and on several occasions, armies of Israel were passing through and there were battles going on. And for the attentive Israelite, passing through perhaps, this place should have this meaning. In past days, and even in this part of the world, most parts of the world, most place names have had a meaning. I often wish that I could penetrate behind the layers of years, and I think there you would so often discover something of the history of the place. Cobham, let's talk about it another time, but it has meaning. There are hints of what happened here in days past, and so many other places. Well, that's what happens with Mizpah. Maybe for some it might have piqued their interest, and they might have said, well, why is this called Mizpah? Tell the story. It's about the Lord watching over his people. Yes, watching over Laban, but Laban's purpose was to say, God needs to keep an eye on you. As the armies of Israel passed through that place, perhaps even just a few soldiers might remember the old story and be encouraged that God was watching over Jacob, Israel, his people. Yes, God did watch over them to call them to account when they sinned. That was what Laban seems to have had in mind. There is that watching over. God watched them when they sinned and strayed. He drew them back. He warned them, spoke to them. But also that care for them, that promise that God was making to Jacob at this very time, that he would watch to care for them, and that he would be with them as long as they trusted in him. And so it's just touching on this remarkable story and this particular grain within the midst of it. What does it mean, Mizpah? May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. Is this a story about two men related by marriage, leaving each other with a touch of bitterness about it and distrust? Well, it is. But that's never what the Bible is about, just to tell us such stories. Most of all, it is another step in the story of God and his care over his chosen people. He was not going to let anything happen to Jacob. He had his purpose to take Jacob back to his place, that they would, the people of Israel, would acquire this land that was promised to them and all that would follow from it. Is this an unusual old Semitic name? Who would call anyone Mizpah, any place Mizpah today? Than they do in Palestine, perhaps. But what for us, Mizpah? Is it just a name? Surely not. The point comes when we may be helpless to do much for one another. We get up that country lane this evening, onto that motorway, through the departure gate tomorrow. We may be helpless, just as Laban or Jacob were helpless towards one another, but to be reminded that there is one whose promise never fails. The Lord does watch. The parent watches their child, probably for both reasons at the same time, to keep them from misbehaving, but especially to keep them from harm. And so the Lord does watch over men. God used a man who had no faith in God himself, it seems. The Lord used him to say this one thing, that the Lord will watch over men. He watches, he holds his chosen people, never leaves them as we walk in his ways. So just in those few words, that the simplicity of it really, as we part from one another, and we do part in a particular way this evening from some very good friends, let us be on this very firm footing, recalling Mizpah, transforming it, shall we say, from Laban's mixed up ideas. May the Lord watch between you and me, you and us, when we're absent one from another. May God speak with us, each one, this evening. Let us pray together.